Roll up, ladies and gentlemen, to the greatest podcast on Earth! Step right up and experience the magnificence that is the Two Ring Circus Podcast! You'll gasp, you'll laugh, and you'll be amazed at what comes next.
Amazing.
Don't worry about the smell. It's just the stars of our show, Tom Italiano.
Tom who?
And Matt Bradshaw.
Fat what?
Welcome!
Fat what?
Get your satanic verses out of this.
Don't be in a rush, Dita, have a drink.
It's off to a good start.
Thank you. Good night. Your microphone's super close to your face.
I like it.
It looks good.
Thanks.
You're really loud.
No, I'm not.
Wait till you say something really funny or laugh unexpectedly.
Nah, it's fine. No, I'm not ticklish.
All right.
Kids can't tickle.
What do you mean?
Kids are no good at tickling.
What type of kids?
Like little goats. All kids.
Little goats are terrible, pretty.
I fucking hate goat's cheese.
What cheese do you like?
Every other kind of cheese.
So sheep cheese?
I think I'm okay with sheep cheese.
But not goat's cheese.
It's so strong. It tastes dirty.
Can you taste it right now?
Yes, I don't like it.
Mine's taste buds.
Yes, I don't like it at all.
That's right.
Goat's cheese, yuck. No, but kids can't tickle. I was down in Tassie last week and my...
Oh, there's your problem.
Second cousin's child. My third cousin. Fourth cousin.
That's weird how it works.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it works. Yeah. I don't even think that's true.
I don't trust it.
I don't even think that's a connection. Anyway, you know when little kids just come up and go, and all it is just scratchy, naily. It's not ticklish.
Well, yeah, that's not ticklish.
That's what they do.
That's not tickling. Whatever you just did then.
That's what they do.
I think perhaps that child just doesn't know how to tickle.
No.
Because
there's never been a child in the history of the world who knows how to tickle.
Okay. Yeah. At what stage in life do you think...
I don't know.
...one transitions?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. We should consult Dr. Google.
Do you think that's a thing?
Dr. Google?
No, I mean the sort of thing that there would be an answer to. Maybe I could put it on Quora.
Yeah. I reckon you could get some decent answers out of that. Yeah.
Although we live in a world where someone would accuse me of being inappropriate with children.
We do live in that world.
Huh?
Yeah. Have you seen that Bill Burr sketch where he talks about like... how it's everything's gone mad. You can't, like, he's like, he used to like kids, but now whenever kids are around, he just puts his hands in the air. He's like, look, I'm not aroused. I'm like, you know, get away from me, kid. Don't talk to me. He, like, kicks the kid away. Used to be able to like kids, now you're not allowed to like kids.
Yeah, it is bullshit.
Ah, it's crazy.
Oh, this is obviously going to be a recurring theme over the course of our journey, I'm sure.
Tickling.
No, not tickling, you jerk. Because I ate cheese.
Oh, God, no.
I ate cheese yesterday. I ate raclette.
Raclette?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It's like a French Swiss cheese.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah. It's French, but it's very nutty. It's very much like a Swiss cheese, but it melts beautifully.
Okay.
So I went
to... What's it taste like? Is it neutral?
I went to my friend's house and we had... cheese and beer, and it was awesome.
Cool combo.
Yeah, it was great.
Great combo.
Yeah. She and her husband have developed a new system of speaking with one another. He is the patriarchy, and she is the oppressed minority.
Hang on, how many people live in their house?
No, just the two of them.
Right.
Yeah.
How can you be an oppressed minority when it's two people?
Well, I mean. She's smaller.
How much closet space do they take up each?
Well, I haven't asked that question.
Yeah, I reckon it would end up pretty even along the
way. But he was out in the studio and she yelled out, hash brown, do you want a sandwich? And he said, yes, I'll have a sandwich. And she said, all right, I'll make a sandwich with the patriarchy. And then I had a text message from her this morning saying, I hope you weren't taken aback by our uses of the phrases oppressed minority and patriarchy. And I said, no, I think you'll recall I've referred to you in public as my very own Asian. So I think it's okay. But yeah. People get upset by stuff like that.
But what in particular?
I don't know. Calling someone my very own Asian. I mean, I've done it on Facebook. Part of it's to get a rise. Part of it's just because it's funny.
Yeah, yeah. People are weird. Or weird.
No, I just...
We're people saying. Are weird. Should we talk about... Should we talk about how people are weird in Australia? With the cricket? Oh... It's so sad. It's sad how upset people are. Like, here's what I reckon.
For those who are watching this, I'm just looking at Dom wondering what's happening next.
Well, for anyone who's like me and didn't really know what happened, right? So apparently our cricket team... I've done a bit of cheating.
Hmm.
I say our cricket team, the Australian cricket team. I've done it well. They've done a bit of cheating and got caught. And there's quite a loud public national outcry of outrage, shame and disappointment. And all I can see is it's people realising how they've duped themselves by revering the Australian cricket captain like he's some kind of modern day Jesus.
Wow, dude.
Well, he is. Like, he's like the most important person in the country for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people who worship sport, and the highest sporting figure in the country, like, because there's all these different codes of sport that people play. But the one game that everyone plays in the country is cricket. Like, if you play football or NRL or whatever else you play in summer, none of those sports have their thing. But so all those people who play those other individual sports all around the country, I was doing the map of Australia with my hands in, they all play cricket. So the Australian cricket captain's like the peak of what you could be if you were good at cricket. So he holds some kind of hero status, whoever holds that job. But he's made into a hero for playing a sport, not for actually doing anything actually heroic. So then when that person proves that they're a normal person in an extraordinary situation and makes a mistake, people are so outraged because they realise they put their belief and faith and kind of, you know, religiously into someone who's not actually a hero. He's just someone who hits a ball better than most other people. So then they kind of, so the reaction is so strong because they go, I've been betrayed, but not by that person.
Aren't we betrayed by anyone in our lives that is found out to be doing the wrong thing?
Well, that's my kind of interpretation of that is that you betray yourself because it's your belief that you put belief into something that's not actually worthy of that faith. Because that's just, like I said, like that's a messianic figure, but it's just someone who's good at playing a sport. Like, I haven't done anything.
Yeah, but my question still stands and it's not related to that. It's like, aren't we disappointed by anyone that we've found out to be doing the wrong thing?
No, because I don't care that he's cheated, because I've never put my faith in. So I, like, you know, so you find out people do the wrong thing all the time, but it's only if you've put your faith in them that you're disappointed, and it's because you feel betrayed by that. But here's someone that usually you're disappointed in, someone you know, someone you have a relationship with, but people don't have a relationship with. That guy that plays cricket is a figure that you have no personal connection to. Well, you have a personal connection to, but you don't have any actual interaction with. So they're made up to be, you make them out, and the society makes them out to be a godlike figure because they're good at sports. So you have this expectation that the rest of their behaviour and the rest of the way they live every other aspect of their life should be representative of the skill that they have in their sport. So they should be perfect in every other way.
Yeah, okay. And then I feel like you're extrapolating a bit too much there. I think this is a guy who's representing Australia and he's done the wrong thing.
Yeah, but the outrage is completely out of proportion to what he's done. He's a sporting person. He plays sport for a job. He gets paid to play. So having a perspective on what the guy does, you kind of go, why does anybody care that much about that? Because, I mean, people do. I'm not saying that people...
He's representing a country.
He's not representing a country unless your society is. He's just playing sport. Like, yeah. It's saying someone represents it, but it's like he's just playing sport.
At a country versus country level.
But just playing sport. That idea that he's representing me and you, he's not representing me and you. He's not at all. You might care, but I don't care that he's playing sport. He's not my cricket captain. He's not my leader of the thing. Like, I don't see him as, just a guy who plays sport. So I understand if you believe that he is important and you'd be let down by him acting like a normal person.
Are you saying you actually can't see the point of view that people have?
No, I can see the point of view. I understand how that happens.
But you think they're stupid for feeling that way?
No, I'm just saying they're stupid. I think people react to it in a way that they realise that it's an absurd situation to make out someone to be that important when all they're actually doing is playing a sport. They're not fixing hair lips in Tibet or curing blindness in India. They're not doing anything heroic. They're not doing actually anything heroic. They're just playing sport. Hmm. They're not curing cancer. They're just playing sport. They're not actually really doing anything really beneficial for the greater good. They're just playing sport. It's just a game. Hmm. And we make that out to be something incredibly important.
Hmm.
And sure.
I think representing your country is quite important.
I'm sure it is, but I don't think it is in playing sport. I don't think it's that important. I think we make it out to be incredibly important because, well, what else do we have to put our faith in a secular society? We don't, you know.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Okay.
I think normal people in extraordinary circumstances eventually can, like, when I say extraordinary circumstances, like the hopes of the country. Like, really? The hopes of the country playing sport? Really? Well, that's weird. Like, the way people talk about it, it's a bit. Okay.
Is there nothing in your life that you would feel that about if someone? I don't know. I can't even frame the question because I can't get a handle on what it is that you're actually saying. I can't get that. You can't see that it's important.
I can't see that it's as important. I understand. This is, we all have religion, right? And sport in Australia is secularly our religion. It's so important.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm not sure why you're making the religious connection there.
Well, because I see it as that's where people put their faith and their.
Yeah, but even when we weren't a majority kind of secular society, we still looked up to sporting heroes. Of course we did.
Yeah, but
your implication is that has replaced religion.
That has... well, yeah, but it's replaced religion for some people. it's not replace. It's not like it's replaced religion. It's I'm saying it's kind of that's what people believe in. That's where people spend their time. That's, you know, they go to games. That's where their community is. They engage with it on the weekends in their own pastimes.
So would you not feel let down by something, someone?
Yeah, of course. Well, but I feel let down by people I know. I don't feel let down by people I don't know. I've been disappointed in the past, but not by something that hasn't been part of my life.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about, you know, when a celebrity does something and people are shocked and outraged, it's like, what, they're normal people that were this, are they supposed to live on this, people act like they're supposed to live on this field of never be able to, they should never make a mistake because they're
supposed not to cheat.
Yeah, supposed not to cheat, but they're normal, that's the thing, they're not unimpeachable, and that people act like they should be, and people make mistakes. People in high pressure situations sometimes don't handle the pressure very well.
He should be put to death. They're just saying they're disappointed.
Yeah, sure. What's the death thing?
I don't know. I feel like you're suggesting that although you understand why people are upset by his actions, their actions, that there's actually no justification for it, for them to be disappointed.
No, I think the proportion of the disappointment is the thing that's like the national outrage, the absolute... I mean, you might have been done gigs over the weekend, just heard the bar talk about it. Just like, wow, you're really upset.
Well, I didn't.
You're really personally... People are personally upset.
Well, and maybe, like, maybe this is where our impasse is, because I haven't heard it like that.
Yeah. Okay, I have. And I'll be like, wow, you really care. Like, there's newspapers, radio, TV. It's the story.
But that's...
No, but it's people, like, people calling into the radio just talking about it all day, every day, and just how heartbroken they are.
Yeah, but that just feeds on itself as well. I mean, that's the nature of media.
Yeah, that's true. Increasingly. I mean, we're talking about it now. But yeah. I'm really shocked at the level...
So would you then think that, I mean, that goes to everything, that we shouldn't hold any of our sporting heroes, in inverted commas, to a higher account because they're just people?
I think if you're going to play a game, you shouldn't cheat. I think you should play by the rules, right? But I think...
And then a real old guard cricket person would say that even more so in cricket.
Well, because
it was, look, it was a gentleman's game.
Before there were cameras, they cheated all day, every day. Like, absolutely. Like, you know, it's the same thing. You look at football. You look at football now. You know, AFL football or NRL or whatever it is, right? These guys still whack each other behind the ball all day, every day.
Yeah.
Right. And they know they can get caught because that's how you play the game. What you do is you play the game, and part of the game culturally is to cheat. That's always been part of the game. When I say cheat, I mean, like, that's breaking the rules. And the idea is to push until, like, someone else breaks the rules more than you did. No, I'm not condoning playing outside the rules. I'm not condoning cheating. But I understand brain snaps. I understand brain fades. I understand being pushed to the point of making ridiculous decisions in life. And that's their life. But I look at that and I go, yeah, I get how you can get there. Yeah, I get it. That's disappointing. It's disappointing for them probably more than anyone else. Not because they have to live with people talking about it, because they have to live with having done it, you know. I was just saying that the what I've seen is the the public outcry and disappointment and shame. I just thought, wow, that's people actually really genuinely are upset about this. And I feel like that part of that is people realizing that they've projected a faith and a belief into something and someone that's out of proportion to what it should be.
Sure, but I think people's reaction to it is the shame they feel about, sure, it's just one individual, but there's a whether or not it's unfair, there's a collective shame that these people feel on behalf of their country. That's a parochial thing.
Yeah.
That I guess, we as a nation were found out to be doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, I guess that's something I don't really relate to.
Anytime you put the name Australia on something and send them overseas to go and do something, that becomes us as a nation. So if someone does the wrong thing, then we all feel like we've done the wrong thing. I think that's where the sense of outrage has come from, that we feel it personally.
Yeah, okay.
Whether or not you think that's justified or not.
Yeah, I think far differently to that, so I don't feel that way. That doesn't cross my mind.
Hmm.
Like I said,
Well, it's the Australian cricket team. They belong to us. We belong to them.
Yeah, see, I still don't.
So it becomes a collective guilt.
Yeah, I still don't feel that.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm drinking water.
Good man.
Like a fucking grown-up.
Oh,
actually, not like a grown-up, like a tiny child.
Out of a sippy bottle.
Has to drink water. Instead
Why?
Of beer and coffee and grown-up fun drinks.
You can drink beer later when you're at work.
Yeah.
Like a grown-up.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Which, you know, luckily for us... what other jobs?
Forklift.
I don't think forklift drivers can drink beer at work.
I've had a friend of mine who did.
Okay. Did you steal a forklift driver? Yeah. Was it as a result of drinking beer at work?
A guitarist I used to work with back in Adelaide that got fired. Him and his mate got fired from working on the Holden plant line for drinking on the job. Yeah, so no, most jobs you can't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought.
No, I think probably, you can't even drink beer working at a bar.
You can in some places.
Yeah, well.
I love those bars. I love those country bars where the rules just don't apply.
Yeah.
We'll round of shots. A shot, you have a shot, shot as well?
Yeah, like it.
I love it. Yeah. Ely Beach, oh God.
Well, are you going up there again in November?
Well, I don't know now.
Oh.
Don't know. I believe we're on the bill, but I don't know. It's confusing, and I keep asking the question, but I don't get an answer. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't booked flights.
Well, that's good. It's not till November.
Yeah, I know, but yeah. I like to know things.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Got some shit going on.
Yeah.
We're going to Perth.
We are. In a month. Yeah.
And just for a holiday.
2 nights.
Oh.
2 nights of fun.
Yeah.
That will be fun.
2 nights in Southbeth and the world's your oyster. I don't eat oysters.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
No?
No,
I used to love mussels.
Yeah, not a fan of that either.
Oh man, so good.
I think it's the consistency more than anything else.
Yeah, right.
Things that are going on in my mind right now. I was like, I won't say that on the podcast.
No, don't. No,
don't say that on the podcast.
No, don't. No,
I won't say that either.
Dude. Oh,
man. You would, which is probably interesting to anyone who's followed this podcast, even for the last 15 minutes, that there would be things that I'm not going to say. Hilarious.
12 rules for life?
Yeah. Rule free?
Rule free.
Yeah. Shall we? I'll get
my... I wrote notes on my doodad today.
Oh, good work.
Yeah.
And what about your iPad?
I quite liked my handwritten notes in my my special Spyrax notebook for this purpose. But I was in front of my computer and it made perfect sense. I didn't know you had a soda stream.
Yep.
Is it fun?
It's a soda stream of consciousness. Is it fun? I don't think it's fun.
No.
But I mean,
I feel like it'd be fun.
It's better than buying bottles of soda water.
Sure.
And then when you want just normal water, you can have normal water. But if you want fizzy water, you can have fizzy water. I mean, just doubling your options. It's the easiest way to get 50% more of something is to start off with one thing and then double it.
This is not rule three, by the way.
Because if you want 50% more of two things, you have to have two things. And that's hard. So you have to have four things in total. But this, I'm going to have fizzy water. Oh, I know.
Rule three.
Kids can't tickle.
Make friends with people who want the best for you.
Yeah, that's right. Which is why I don't play cricket. I'm going to get to chapter three in a second in the book. Look, I'm clearly quite conscious of not adding to the world's recycling problems with bottles of soda water, but I seem to like using little pieces of paper in my book.
Mm.
Yeah.
In my book.
In the book. Do you have... So, would you like to summarise?
Sure.
The chapter?
Sure.
The title kind of summarises it, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. So he posits that we have to demand accountability of the people we associate with.
Well, and they have to, and the other way as well. That's the
yes,
yeah,
yes, yes.
So it's yeah,
it's got to be reciprocal.
Yeah,
yeah, and in fact, that friendships in general have to be reciprocal. They've got to be an arrangement, that, like a symbiotic arrangement. So he talks about helping people and why we do it and being and us needing to be clear about why we do it, whether it's to genuinely try to do good or perhaps, in brackets, more likely that we do it for a host of other reasons that are far less altruistic.
Yeah, there was a quote here. Where is it? Sometimes when people have a low opinion of their own worth, or perhaps when they refuse responsibility for their lives, they choose a new acquaintance of precisely the type who proved troublesome in the past. Such people don't believe that they deserve any better, so they don't go looking for it.
Yeah. And that... helping someone that we perceive as being in need of help is almost implicit with them being of a lower, because he talks about the social status.
Yeah.
It's certainly a way of salving our own consciences and certainly a way of avoiding the things that we have to work on for ourselves.
Oh.
Hmm. Which is interesting, because you're a helper monkey.
Yeah, a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah.
In the sense that... No, actually, that's I phrased that incorrectly. Not just my use of the word monkey either. you are the first person to offer help if someone asks for it. But you're actually not the person that...
This is actually what I meant.
you don't go searching for people to render assistance.
I'm not a fan of a lost cause.
Yeah, that's right.
At all.
That's right. And that's very much what this chapter's about, which is interesting.
Yeah.
In my younger years, I was absolutely that person. I was that person in relationships as well. I was the one that would try to be the... Saviour is the wrong word, but you know, the saviour for the other person.
Yeah.
And even if it wasn't conscious that there was this, at the end of the relationship, often I would realise that that was what the start of the relationship was.
Yeah, okay.
And that's often because at the end of the relationship finished because I realised I actually couldn't help.
Yeah, all right.
Which only kind of became manifest that there was help that needed to be given the whole way along. But the crux of this is you actually can't help someone that isn't willing to be helped.
Yeah, yeah.
And that isn't willing to help themselves.
Yeah, and he says that about his practice. Like, he's had those court-mandated patients that were supposed to go for therapy, and he's like, you just couldn't help them because they didn't want to be helped.
And it's kind of quite trite to say that. Like, I mean, I've lost count of the number of times that people have said you can't help someone that doesn't want to be helped. There's a lot of truth in those old cliches. but I certainly find it interesting that he talks about needing to be clear in our own minds about why it is that we're helping. Because the thing I wanted to ask you about on that subject is the idea of giving to charity. And whether you do it because you want to do good, or because you see value in what the charity is that you're giving to, or whether you do it because it just makes you feel good, the sum event is that it works for both people. The charity gets whatever you're giving them. They get the help, they get the money, they get the whatever. They do their bit of good with that, and you feel good about having done your part. What do you think about that? What are your feelings about that? Because there's an implication in what he's saying that that's not the right reason to do things. No, it's not the implication. It's the very clearly stated fact.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if like a charitable situation like that is different to an interpersonal relationship. That's the question I'm asking.
Well, I think it is. Very much like, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, being disappointed in, having an expectation of how someone is supposed to behave and then not meeting that expectation and then you being disappointed and then trying to work out is that the fault of the person for not meeting my expectation or is it my fault having an unrealistic expectation? And I would say the first protocol in that is that's your fault for having an unrealistic
100%.
Expectation.
And for having an expectation at all.
Yeah, well, having an expectation of someone you have a relationship with is reasonable to have an expectation, particularly if it's one that's understood between you.
Mm.
So if it's a contract, not an idea of, oh, I expect you to behave like this. It's like, well, I never knew that. We never had that agreement. Mm. So the thing with the charity is like, I think the expectation straight away is like, oh, I've done my thing and whatever you do, because I don't really care beyond that because I've got my interaction out of it. So I think giving to charities is tricky because of that. I don't know if I answered your question properly.
I think you did at the start.
The only reason to give to charity is to make yourself feel better. In the first sense, because you see something go, oh, look, that looks sad and I'm in a better position, so I can help contribute to making that better, right? But the real, it's a transaction. Like, I'm buying feeling better because I know that. So, and I don't think, well, I'm going to do the just. No, there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and by all means.
No, I agree. I never have either. That's just because the utility of giving to charity kind of works for everyone.
Yeah.
You feel better. They get to do something.
Well, yeah. I mean,
amount of good to the greatest number of people.
Well, the interesting thing about giving money to charity, certain charities, different charities do different things for, obviously.
Sure.
So if you knew the stats of where, of how much went to where, you'd probably never give to a charity again.
Yeah.
So, but still,
mm.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. But
I signed up with the Australian Wilderness Society yesterday.
Oh, I give them money.
Really?
Yeah.
How much do you know about what they do?
Not a lot.
Are you aware how small the organisation is?
No.
Tiny.
Right.
Tiny. So I met a girl in Frankston yesterday and got talking with her, or she got talking with me, because of course she was canvassing.
Yeah.
She's one of 13 fundraisers. That's it. They have 13 fundraisers. They got 15 campaigners that do the back end stuff, and everyone else is kind of volunteers that they sign up. So the ones that actually go to the protests and stuff. It's a tiny, tiny organisation that has done amazing things. And I'm definitely getting soft. I started crying when she was telling me about what they'd achieved. What a dickhead. And then she felt compelled to give me a hug at the end because I was so sad. Not sad, just the David and Goliath aspect of what it is that they're doing really got to me. Why are you laughing at me?
No.
You are, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I was genuinely moved by what it was that they have managed to do. The areas of wilderness, forest,
so,
water. That, yeah, go on.
Given the subject of the,
yeah,
of the thing, were you helping them or were they helping you?
Oh, that's exactly why I brought it up.
She picked you out of the thing and went, there's someone.
No. I don't just walk around looking like a soft touch, surely. Do I?
Well, I don't know.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Is well, the answer to that.
No, my question is, my answer really is, when I see you walking around, no, but I don't see you walking around all the time. I've certainly never seen you walking around in Frankston. I don't know what you would look like in that scenario. You might look like a soft touch compared to other people in that scenario might look harder than you. You might look soft.
Are you having a go at Frankston?
No.
I think you are.
No, because I mean, you can stand it anywhere. I stopped to get petrol today, and it was on the way here, and I was in the service station on the freeway, and I don't know why, but it just happened to be fluoro everybody in there, right? And these guys, I looked at them and I'm like, wow, they all kind of look hard, and I don't mean like the British soccer fan hard. I mean, like these guys were up at 4 to be at work at 5 and did work, like physical work, right? They've already done a day. They're not just out here getting lunch on the way, you know, with Smoko. Like they've done their day at work already, right? And they're covered in grease and shit, and they just looked a certain way that made me feel really soft. And you know, I did a gig last night, I sang Paul Simon songs, like, whoa, like, you know, like you put me next to those guys, you're like, yeah. I mean, I haven't shaved for 2 days. Oh, I look hard. No, I look
2
soft.
2 hours.
Yeah, I look soft. Yeah, so, yeah. I'm just saying, in that scenario. I'm not saying it's Frankston. Oh, maybe compared to everyone else, they might have been wearing fluoro, you might have been wearing checks. Like, I'll try that guy. He looks like I'll be able to give him a hug at the end of it, and he'll walk away thinking that he's done the right thing, but really I've helped him because I made him feel good about himself.
I did not feel good about myself. I didn't, honest to God.
Because
I didn't feel bad about myself. I didn't walk away from the transaction thinking, wow, I've done a really good thing.
Did you feel worse about yourself because there are people out there doing that kind of work and you're not?
One of the things they do is offer a 2-day class in how to be a volunteer.
Right.
Mm.
Like,
so I felt bad about saying
like
no to that.
Reconciliation, First Communion, Confirmation, all in 2 days.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like going clear. For environmentalists.
You've obviously seen that doco.
Well, no, but I was just.
I really haven't seen it.
No, I'm just.
Oh, it's pretty good.
We were talking about the, you know, religion of sport. I didn't want to get into here's your batting, bowling, catching camp. So, oh, it's looking
good.
Banning bowling, catching cans.
Thank you. Hold on.
No, just, you know, school holidays, and there's going to be some kind of, you know, cricket camp for kids that are going to get cancelled now because no one wants to be like Steve Smith and cheat. It's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, mums won't let their kids play this sport, or, you know, dads won't let their kids play that. So kids won't be allowed to play any sport soon because so-and-so cheats, so-and-so's a, you know, drug addict. So that guy, you can't ride a bike anymore because Lance Armstrong.
Yep. Fair enough, too. Fair enough, too. I'm going to get rid of both my testicles and burn all my Kevin Spacey DVDs.
It's ridiculous. It's like, oh, look, human beings being human beings. Oh, no. What do we expect them to be? Crazy. Yep.
Anyway.
Back to the book. One thing that I think I really had a big reaction to the first couple of, first 10 pages, where he's talking about living in rural Canada. I can't say rural, it's hard. It takes me a couple of goes to rural. You know, lived in the country. I was the same, you know, I lived in the country, and that's, he just described my teenage years. And,
yeah, right.
Of parties and stuff. And I think I was lucky to be, lucky to find the guitar at 12. So,
you're by the way, that actually describes the situation I found you in when we first met.
What do you mean?
Sitting in the back room at that venue reading a book while everyone else had their fucking balls hanging out of their pants.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
That creates an unnecessarily weird vision. Was that, I don't mean everyone else had their balls hanging out of their pants.
Was that, have you seen my balls? Yeah.
It's still a funny gag.
It is funny.
Yeah.
It is funny. I didn't grow up, so in a sense, I didn't grow up. I didn't grow up. I still haven't grown up. I play guitar for a job.
Job.
Yeah, I know.
job.
Hmm? Well, I didn't go to primary school in the country. I moved out there, you know, when I was 12, so I didn't have any primary school friends. So I kind of got there halfway through childhood, and at that time it's when, you know, I'd had a guitar for 3 months and I moved to the country, and so I didn't have any friends. I never played cricket, I didn't play football. So what are you laughing at?
Resisting the urge to sing Peaches. It's all right. Trying not to smile.
Okay.
I didn't want to take you away.
So all I'm saying is I relate to the story in the book where eventually, as I started making friends, but all my friends, because I play guitar, they were muso kids. So they would come from the city out to the country, we'd have band practice. But still that teenage wasteland of, we'd have band practice and someone would sneak a bottle of grappa from someone's house, and then we'd, you know, and we were the conscientious bad kids in that sense, you know. So we'd have band practice and then go and crash a party somewhere.
Yeah, right.
So very much related to his story. And then absolutely related to when I was 18 and I moved to the city and all my Geelong friends had a huge issue. You think you're a big shot, you live in the city. Like, people used to say that. I could come back to Geelong for a birthday party.
Wow.
So what's it like in the city? It's like, oh, it's good. You know,
it's like 45 minutes away.
Yeah, I go to uni and then I go to work, so I have to have a job to pay my rent, and then occasionally I get to come back home on the weekend and see you guys. It's hard work, you know.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, you think, you know, after a while, after a couple of drinks, you think you're fucking shit hot now, you live in Melbourne. It's like, what? And what that did, is it made me not go back.
Yeah.
It made me go, I can't be around you. You're jerks. And it...
100%.
So this story that he talks about, you know, of being around, particularly the bit where he says his childhood friend came to see him and then brought someone who was stoned, and he said, you have to take this piece of garbage and leave. I had friends like that.
Mm.
And I was lucky that I had a job. I got a job when I was 16, and so Saturday morning I had to be at work at 5 a.m. so I couldn't get drunk on Friday night, whereas my friends could. You know, I might have a beer, but I would, like, I've got to go now, I'm going to be up for work. And so I saw them go down that path of gateway, alcohol being the gateway drug into marijuana, and then by the end of high school, you know, certainly by the time I'm 19, a lot of heroin, and, you know, and then it gets worse. Most of those people came out of it really well eventually, but it took a long time. But those formative years of kind of leaving high school into uni, like he talks about here, just going, well, I guess I have to replace my friendship group because you just want me to do the stuff that you're doing. I can't do that. And what I can tell you is up until about 3 or 4 years ago, I had massive guilt about it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, huge guilt about not being able to connect with the people who I, from my past, who I love. Like, these people who I love dearly because I grew up with. But then we kind of went that way and, you know, in different directions. And I felt like I abandoned because I didn't have the maturity to help without getting involved with what they were involved in. Like, I just knew I wouldn't be able to resist. And then it was like, if you want me to help, I'll help. Like, I said it to three of my friends. If you want me to do something, I will do something, but I can't do anything you don't want me to do, and I can't get involved with what you're doing. And it was like, oh, fuck off then. You know? Mm. Oh, okay, all right, well, I've done what I can.
Yeah.
But I felt terrible for a really long time. And a bit of therapy helped me out.
Yeah, right. Mm.
So when I'm reading, well, I was listening to it first, and when I read it, I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he seems to have moved on from that and just go, well, you just got to let that go. And it took me a really long time, so.
Yeah, well, he uses the phrase, sacrificing the future to the present.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is really simple, but really kind of powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very Western.
Very what?
It's a Western society. It's how we are in society.
Well,
it's
it like, is.
You know, I'll do this thing for you and you pay me for it next week.
Okay.
You know.
Oh, that wasn't my interpretation of
it. Breaking it down too, yeah. Of that, you know, I'll, that's kind of what all good relationships are too. It's like, well, you know, I'll be here for you, you'll be here for me, you know, when I need you. I might never call on you, but, you know, if I do, you know, I'm going to call on you one day.
That's interesting. Yeah, okay. He is very... He's very clear about... He's disparaging about people in general. In the sense that most of us choose to take the path of least resistance, and we do the thing that's easiest.
Yeah, 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 and definitely he says that almost word for word here, doesn't he? Assume that first you are doing the easiest thing, yeah, and not the most difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, assume that.
Absolutely, yeah. And in that sense, he's talking about. I mean, if I made my note about that in relation to going to someone's aid. And making sure that you're doing it for the right reasons, or whether you're doing it to make yourself look kind of bigger and more virtuous, or to convince yourself that you're actually a good person. But the assumption that you're actually probably doing the easiest thing, which is I'm doing this because it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Because I am good.
Well, you know, the one of the things that I got out of that is, and it goes back to that kind of first part of this conversation about looking at someone who's good, and, you know, there's someone, you know, the Australian cricket captain, he's good at sport. It doesn't mean he's good at anything else.
Sure.
Like, and but there's an expectation he's going to be. It's like you doing something nice for someone.
Well, I think I'm going to have to stop you using the cricket analogy.
Okay.
It's doing
me. But I was just saying, like, it's like having understanding that. You can be good at certain things, and you can be a good person, and you can be a shitty person, and you are probably both of those things all at the same time. Not maybe at the exact moment.
Right? No.
But
he talks about that a lot in the next chapter.
Yes, he does, yeah. But I think that's... I mean, he's...
In fact, he talks about it a lot, full stop. The yin and yang.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really... I think it's an important thing to...
Absolutely.
...to remember. Someone I know, you know, she has a She's a pretty difficult. She just is one of those people that modern life is complex, and she has difficulty with the complexity of modern life, right? And most of us do have difficulty with it, but we kind of ride it out. What makes her different to most other people is she openly talks about, my life's difficult, I need assistance and help, please somebody help me, right? And so she had to move house, and she put a call out saying, does anyone have any moving boxes that they can give me by this date? And I was like, well, I've lived where I've lived for long enough. My brother took half my moving boxes when he moved. I've still got some moving boxes. I will be in Melbourne on this day. I can bring them to you and drop them off to you. What was interesting about that interaction is that I got there and I gave her boxes, and she started telling me about all the other things that had to happen in the course of this move and how much pressure she felt like she had, and how difficult it was, and, you know, she started crying, and I know I'd already done something helpful by giving her some boxes, because obviously, you know, boxes are a pain in the ass to get, and if you want good ones, if you're going to put something in storage, you want good ones, and they've got to last long, so generally you have to buy them, and she doesn't have any money, and all that kind of stuff. And I felt myself, when she was telling me about all this other stuff, saying, I could move my life around to help this person, but I'm not going to. Beyond what I've already done, something else pops up and it's, you know, I've got a free 3 hours in my calendar. Yeah, you know, I'm happy to do that with anyone who I think needs help or just asks for it. But in that thing, I was just like, no, I think I've kind of done my bit here. And then what I just thought about is like, am I a jerk? I could probably move some stuff around to help this person more. And I went, I kind of got my own shit to muddle through the next 6 weeks while she's going through that.
I do. So where did you end up falling on it?
I've gone...
In your head, I mean.
I'm a jerk.
Right.
And a nice guy. Like, I'm a good guy, and I'm like, I'm both, you know? A total jerk wouldn't have gone out of their way to organise to go out to the shed and clean up a bunch of boxes, put them in the car, drive them 100 k's away at their convenience when she's going to be home. Like a total jerk wouldn't do that, right? But a really nice person wouldn't shift the rest of the calendar around to help the other times. And I didn't do that because I'm both.
Yeah.
And I kind of recognise that, no, I just did a nice thing for someone, right? And I have helped her out in a certain way. And I don't need to do more to make me feel better about myself.
Sure.
And I think the things that, although she was explaining herself and it was like it appeared really traumatic what she was going to have to do, the things that she said she was going to have to do, she sounded like normal things that people have to do when they move house.
Right.
So I was just like, okay, I can see that for certain people is huge. But I still think she's capable of managing it. Who knows if that's the truth.
Because I suppose the next step, not for probably someone like you, but for a lot of people, would have been to do the shifting around of everything you would have had to have done in order to incorporate her plans into your life. And then be resentful about it afterwards.
Maybe other people would do that. I mean, if I decided to, I wouldn't be resentful.
No, that's right.
I just don't do that. But I tend to make...
I think a lot of people would. That was the point.
I tend to make the right decision for myself enough, which is interesting because that's what this is all about. It's like, you know... I mean, would she have been the scenario, you know, in this chapter, which talks about, you know, what's your motivation to help this person? And I think beyond the initial thing that I did, I think if I was doing any more, it would have been,
yeah,
it would have been something that was,
yeah. I certainly have one long-standing relationship in my life that is that their outlook on life is very much I'm doing this thing and I not because I expect this in return, but and I expect this in return. So they don't do it for the reason of wanting the reciprocity,
but they expect
that the reciprocity is going to happen.
Jesus.
From stuff as simple as holding a door open for someone, and then when they walk through it, not saying, and that person not saying anything, and them actually then saying, thank you.
Whoa.
And the number of times I had conversations with this person of like, dude, that's not what it's about. Like, do it if you want to do it. Don't do it if you don't want to do it. But don't do it with an expectation of some sort of positive response. Yeah. Like, that's not, you don't let someone into traffic. It's nice if you get a wave, but if you don't, it's like, no.
Yeah, we're doing that.
No, that's not how it works. And they're the little things. Our situation is much bigger than that.
Wowza.
So it's interesting. It's certainly interesting in the context of this chapter. Mm. Really, really rang true to me and the things that I've experienced. And so I suppose the crux of the chapter is just making sure you surround yourself with people who are going to help you be better.
Hmm.
Because you either surround yourself with people who are self-destructive, therefore destructive, to you, to the relationship, to everything, or you surround yourself with people that aren't like that, that hold you to account because they hold themselves to account, because they take responsibility for their actions, and that demands better of the other person in the reciprocal relationship.
You know, even you and I, if we just take the isolated podcast situation of like two busy people who, in the sense of, we can make time to do this, but if we didn't do this, we'd fill it up with something else that we feel like we have to do.
Hmm.
I'd say you're probably the only other person I know who has never said, I've never heard you say, and I can tell you what I've heard almost anyone else say, oh, I was bored the other day. Like, I've never heard you say that you were bored, and I certainly haven't said I was bored since I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like, we've just
actually spoken about that before.
Being bored is just something that, like, it just never happens to me. I'm never sitting around going, what am I going to do? Like,
no, there's always something
to do. No, there's anything wrong with that. We could not do this, and our lives would be just as busy.
Yeah,
we would fill it with something else.
Yeah.
But what we do is we've said, hey, do you want to do this thing? Yeah. All right. Then we have to do it. And it's never just you going, podcast this week? It's never just me.
Hmm.
One of us gets to say, hey, we need to work out when this is going to happen. And we keep each other. I know we're just talking about the podcast, and there are plenty of other things that you and I have not kept each other accountable for in our friendship. But this is an example of like.
He's talking about me.
This is an example of, because we do this, I feel like we make an effort in other aspects of our life to make this happen. And in order to make this happen, we have to do other stuff which is important, which reminds us how important doing other things is. Even something simple like, if you're coming to my house, I clean up a bit.
You do?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you found the brush in the toilet before.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Just that, I'm going to shut that door. There's not that many doors in my house.
I know, that's what I did out there.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
Yes, the phrase "don't even" was mentioned in this place today when Dom looked in the gig room.
Yeah, so
there's a ceiling fan lying on the floor.
It's resting.
Yeah,
you can't hang off a roof all day every day. Actually, you can't hang off the ceiling. Hanging off a roof is a completely different thing.
What about this? Coming close to the end of this. I wrote here, friends, colon. Choose people who want to be better. Loyalty must be negotiated fairly and honestly, and you are not morally obliged to support someone who is making the world worse.
Like the Australian cricket captain. All that works in that appraisal you just appraised.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Point being that you can, the people you have immediately around you can make your life easier or harder. So why would you choose someone that makes it harder?
Oh, wow.
And sometimes it can be hard to choose, but if you're clear about the reasons why you're choosing, that makes it easier, I think.
I actually asked someone...
But it's hard to be clear.
3 weeks ago. Yes. Sorry, I wasn't...
No, you're right.
I thought you'd finished.
I've never finished. I might tack something on now. There might be an addendum to my statement.
Well...
Go on.
I'm just waiting for your addendum.
I'm waiting for you to start.
I asked someone about 3 weeks ago why she continued to pursue our friendship.
Whoa.
It's like, I'm just wondering... It's not clear to me that you're getting anything out of this.
I know this person?
Yeah.
I have to have this conversation with someone too. I don't know if I'm brave enough to have it though. No, I do have to. It's not the same person.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Oh, okay.
Oh, maybe. You never know.
Because I think I know who you're talking about.
It's not the first time I've had this conversation with anyone, but I just kind of...
No, because you're quite brave.
I don't... It certainly doesn't feel like that at the moment. It feels more of a... ever since I had a car crash when I was 19, I feel like I can often step outside my body and look at me doing stuff. I can kind of... Particularly in conversation where I'm like...
Fuck, this is a revelation.
Where I feel like I'm the camera. Right, looking in on the conversation going, and then the voice from the person standing over there is in my head going, why are you still having this conversation?
Okay.
Why is this person here? It's not clear to me that this person's getting anything out of your friendship. And it's not me, because I generally know what I'm getting out of it. And it's generally something unhealthy, but, you know. I'm looking at the other person going, why are they? This is very confusing. It feels weird. You should ask. Go on, ask. And then I don't know how, because I'm not brave. I'm like a not brave person at all. Well, it just comes out. And then usually they go, in this picture, I was like, what? Where did that come from? And I had to say, oh, over there. That was my answer. Where did it come from? Like, it didn't come from.
I think it is brave. Maybe because it just, there it is.
I'm just saying, like...
brave because it's honest. And honesty's hard. You're asking because you genuinely want to know the answer.
Yeah.
And honesty very often comes across to the person you're being honest with as hurtful. And sometimes deliberately hurtful.
Yeah, but
being truthful and then being honest...
Yeah.
There's no recourse to that. Like, I guess I'm sorry if you're hurt by this.
Yeah.
Not my intention.
Yeah.
You know. That's part of the big points of this book in general is truthfulness.
Yeah.
Got to tell the truth.
I've only been consciously hurtful once in the last, since 2013. Was towards my sister in 2016.
Huh.
Yeah. She'd been on painkillers and she was, that stuff had just accentuated her behaviour at the time to the point where I'd had enough and I was like, that's it, I've had enough and I'm not holding back.
Wow, okay.
And it turns out, like, I ended up going overseas. We had a fight and I went overseas not sorting it out. Yeah. And I came back, she was really upset. And I said, all right, I won't do that again. I said, I'm sorry that I'm sorry that the way I behaved upset you. What I did was, I apologize. So what I did was wrong. I know it was. I'm selfish and shitty. And I left it at that. And about 10 minutes later, she came in and she said, same thing. I'm sorry what I did. Like, you know, I really had to work out that I'm not doing this to get anything back. Like, no. I know that what I did was shitty. And I thought I was just sticking up for myself, but really what I was doing is I was trying to make you feel like shit. That's what how, and I knew it. And I knew that the apologies had to be, it had to be one way. It didn't have to.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, she was being a shit too. Like, that, you know, she was, but, it, you know, my part was, I needed to claim and be responsible for. And it was interesting that because I
without saying, but remember.
It was like, I didn't do it.
No.
And interestingly, like it, that came back anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't think it really would. I don't think it would have been a particularly successful resolution if I had taken that course.
No, of course not.
And it was, yeah, it was.
It's what a lot of people do, but of course it's not. Yeah. It's not the right way of doing
it. It's movies, though.
Just own your stuff. Own your, take responsibility for your actions.
Mm-hmm.
These are going to be recurring themes through this whole experience, the book.
Yeah, should we just not do any more? Should we just leave it at chapter 3?
No.
Okay. Let's finish today.
Okay.
And maybe by the next time we have a conversation, some other sporting nutcase will do something for us to talk about.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I found that conversation profoundly troubling.
Well, surround yourself with someone who agrees with you about that stuff.
Anyway, how was your gig last night?
It was good. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I learnt lots.
Do you know
of
which
chords.
Gig I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Paul Simon one.
No.
No.
I'm talking about Wednesday at Crown.
Oh, last night.
Was the Paul Simon gig good? I didn't even know you were doing it.
Yeah, that one was still good.
Good. Good. I'm glad.
Okay. It's hot today.
27 degrees, apparently.
Oh. Thursday, Wednesday. Anyway, I need to go to the bathroom. So
do I. Race ya.
See ya.
Oh. Sorry.
That's how much I need to go. I'm just going to cut the podcast off right there.
Okay. Well, you go. I'll finish up.
Did you finish the podcast?
Yep.
All right. See you, everyone.
Yep.
I'm going to go touch my...
Okay. See ya.